I'll tell you who'd never leave us. Never. He'd never try and go to another big station, radio station, and just try and take the cash over there. Is John, a.k.a. Colin Ralph from the Herald Sun, The Buzz, who's on the line ready to talk to us about the latest news in football. Good morning, Buzz.
Hello, gentlemen. You're a very generous man, aren't you? They're the same letters, they're just said differently. That's what happens to me most of the time when I butcher the English language. And so I'm going to write, I've actually written it down, same letters, just said differently. So when you guys sack me and you say no one can understand you, I said the same letters, they're just said differently.
Colin Mariqua is the same as Colin Marikawa, as far as I'm concerned.
Would you got that right, Ralphie? You would have got that
right. I would have got that right, yes. He's a he's an exceptional talent, and sometimes when you have a collect on someone at good odds, just like, you know, at Talak in 1962 or all those betting pros, sometimes you just never forget, Daniel. You never forget.
No, you always remember the good ones. That is true. That is absolutely true.
1986 at Talak.
I thought 62 was a long way back for at Talak. Might have been a second edition. Ralphie, speaking of a long way back, are the Blues a long way back? A bit of news coming through from them in the last 24 hours or so?
Well, I mean, David Cunningham with an ACL doesn't help. And look, I know the club's talking about just a little AC injury for Harry Mackay. Look, you know, Doc Larkin said, look, it looks every bit like that subluxation that just keeps popping out. But anyway, the club's adamant that that's the injury for Mackay. He's going to have to carry that throughout the year. Look, it was fascinating what Mick Malthouse wrote about in the Sunday Herald Sun on the weekend. He tried to compare them to Melbourne. He talked about their list demographic, and he talked about their progress. What he was screaming at but didn't say is, it's the coaching. It's the coaching. You know, this is a club that, you know, that David T keeps saying, we've got to play four quarters. We're not playing four quarters. That's the reason why we're not winning. You know what? You don't have to play four quarters, because if you have a good coaching structure, you can absorb the one or two bad quarters and then you come out and win the game. Now, I think the question that needs to be asked, and I think the question that the new president-elect Luke Sayers will be asking, is if we had a Ross Lyon or if we had a coaching of senior experience, would we have won three or four more games this season? And I think that the answer is probably yes. To think that they have the talent there, and yes, they probably lack a star midfielder or two, and they've missed the likes of Jack Martin, you know, with injury, and they'd love to, you know, some of their recruits to be better. But that's the real frustration with Carlton right now. They've got enough talent. They've had enough years of experience in terms of building that talent. You just got to say that defensive system just continues to fail them at critical times.
I don't know if we can confidently say that there'd be another few more wins.
Which games would have they won, Ralphie, if Ross Lyon or Alistair Clarkson were coaching Carlton?
Well, they were good enough to win that game on the weekend. They're continually dominating periods of games, and they kick a winning score, but they allow a team to kick. Well, when you've seen the statistics, I think it's like 18 periods of conceding six goals in a row. And so, you know, whether that's David Teague's issue, whether that's, you know, as a lot of people have speculated, it's time for them to replenish their coaching stocks, whether it's getting that elite person in there. Yeah, I think we're realising now with Nathan Buckley and Justin Longmuir, so often it is a coaching team, but so often it's the coach that gets it in the neck, where Justin Longmuir moves off and all of a sudden the ball movement and the capacity to stop goals is diminished. And so, all I would say is that Luke Sayers is someone who reminds me of what happened to Carlton when Brett Ratten was there as a reasonable coach, and they thought to themselves, we want something bright and new and shiny that we can sell. And so they secured Mick Mulder. And so, you know, the more you listen to people who know very well about Luke Sayers, you know that he's a mover and shaker. He's a bright young thing that wants to get it done himself. You know, he's got the ear of the powers that be. He's got the ear of the foxes. And then he's the kind of guy who's going to want to come in and put his stamp on the football club. Now, if the club is in a really solid position, win-loss positionally, that's fine. But if it is that David Teague is still, let's call it 8-14 or whatever it is, well, Luke Sayers is a pretty impatient guy who wants this club to win premierships. And right now, they've got enough talent to not win premierships, but to be better than what they are. And so, you know, I think that David Teague will be very aware of that right now. And so, you know, they're trying to fix their defensive systems, but I wouldn't think anyone in the competition thinks that their game plan defensively is in the top 15 in the comp.
And I think, Ralphie, the thing with... And look, I reckon I must be in the minority here. I think where Carlton sits at the moment is where they should sit based on their list. They've had a very difficult draw. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Second most difficult according to the form ladder.
So when I look at their next four, it's Hawthorn and then it's Sydney away, West Coast at home, and then the Giants. You know, I'd like to think that they could win two of those four at least. But I think there's two parts to the conversation with Carlton. It's should they be winning more? But I think it's, as you were saying, are they too easy to play against? But I think they're two different conversations, aren't they?
Well, so they're 3-6. Yes.
Which game should have they won that would make that win-loss a better scenario? The only one, we talked about this yesterday, the only one I can think of is the Collingwood game, but Collingwood were playing a lot better then than what they are now.
Yeah, I think you would also acknowledge, though, that you know throughout all of David Teague's tenure, Whitey, they continue to bleed goals, and not a lot continues to change in regards to that. You know, they play a very one-on-one system. You know, they don't have their wings rolling back. You know, maybe it's that they just need that Camden McIntosh type. And what we did see with Melbourne is they realised they had really significant issues with their wings. And so they, you know, they went out and paid up money. They went and got a Langdon who is exceptional for them in not only charging forward but also coming back. So look, maybe there are tweaks that they can make in game. Their issues right now for them is that their wingmen are players like Lockie O'Brien who they don't necessarily trust. So maybe it's putting your best wingman. You know, they had Sam Walsh as a wingman, but I pushed him into the inside mid. Maybe it's just a very simple tweak like that. Right now they are a better side and they have much more talent than the team that they are playing at 3-6. And, you know, being in games like Melbourne, you know, being in games like that where you think you're a chance to win it, but yet again, didn't really get very close despite their output on the day.
My personal view on the Blues is if their best team isn't out there, they become vulnerable. I think they're in that situation with their list. That if you haven't got Curnow out there, you haven't got Fisher out there, if you haven't got Martin out there, Cunningham, who I think is a solid rock solid player emerging. Marchbank's the one that hasn't been there for ages either. I just think they haven't got their best out there. They become vulnerable, particularly against good teams. Now, Melbourne are the best team in footy at the moment. Haven't been defeated in 9 weeks, so I'm not sure that's the one we refer to. The Bulldogs one is the one that they let slip, and they should have won that game if you talk about just where they were in game. But you talk about owning portions of the game. Offensively, Buzz, if a new coach comes in, they probably don't have those moments, but they get a bit back defensively. So it's a bit of a balance as to where they fit in game and how those games look and whether or not they do have control of them like they have under this more offensive brand that David Teague has implemented at the Blues.
Yeah, so I suppose the issue for me is, have you seen them absorb, you know, the punches of a contender, only concede, you know, 2 goals for because their defence is exceptional, and then come out and win a game? You know, as David Teague says, we need to play those four quarters. Well, you actually don't in football. You know, you need to absorb the best 40 minutes of your rival, and because you've got such exceptional defensive systems, and we know that they've got the defensive personnel there, especially with Zach Williams back in there, reinforcing the, you know, the likes of Liam Jones and Wiedering, I just don't see Carlton being that team that has any durability right now, that has any resilience. If the other team is better than them for 40 minutes, they blow them out. And again, Carlton fans are back where they were before going, I think we're okay, but you know what? We don't seem to have the game plan to be resilient enough to win games of football.
Sam McClure was reporting yesterday that Justin Lepich has been approached twice in the last couple of weeks by Carlton people, once by Brad Lloyd to be a senior assistant and once by Chris Judd to take his spot on the board. What's that saying about the Blues?
It says that their assistant coaches would potentially need to look for other jobs, and that's the hardest part of coaching, and that's why, you know, these coaches want to be paid more money. It's almost danger money, isn't it? That you know that at some stage there, whether it's 2 or 3 years into a cycle, you're probably going to get turfed, and you might not get another job. And so that's why, you know, when assistant coaches are getting paid $90,000 and everyone's saying, well, that's not bad, it's above the living wage, it's above the average wage, you know, it's such a volatile industry there. And so, look, clearly there are people there, which include Brad Lloyd, who very much want them to want David Teague to succeed. They want him to bring in players and coaches around him, and they haven't made a decision on him. As I said, sometimes when it's the president coming over the top, well, it's very hard to resist that when he's the bloke who's, you know, ultimately going to make those decisions.
There'd have to be some level of uncomfortability there, considering that they've brought in John Worsfold and now looking at Justin Lepich, that I don't know how that would be playing out internally. Just at Collingwood, Ralphie, again, there's talk that maybe Nathan Buckley is now going to survive, and it's just a question of what they're going to do around him. What's your feeling? Because there's all sorts of speculation and talk around the Magpies for obvious reasons.
Yeah, look, Graham Wright was really insistent upon it a couple of weeks back, and so I don't think it changes that narrative. I think the only surprising element to this is they just keep losing games of football, and so everyone out there just keeps going, well, you can't extend this bloke when you've set him up to fail, when you've basically said, you know, coming off a finals victory, they said to him, no, we're not going to extend your contract until later in the year. And so I think clearly the perception there from the fans was that, OK, we need to see if Nathan Buckley's any good. And instead, it seems like it was more of Nathan Buckley being more really happy. And Nathan not wanting to rock the boat. Okay, if you don't want to extend me, that's fine. I know I can coach my way out of this situation. And all of a sudden, they're in the position that they are, which is that no one at Collingwood, there is no real position of strength right now. The board is mediocre. The coach himself, you know, he's probably not in the top eight coaches that people would want to poach. The list management, we probably know, is in the bottom three. The messaging coming out of the club from a PR position is really confusing as well. All those things are what Eddie Maguire tried to build up before he left. You know, I just keep thinking back to Peter Jackson when he arrived at Melbourne and he said, what are we actually good at right now that's going to take us to a premiership in terms of our people, in terms of the list? I mean, how many people out there would you want to poach? You know, it's not a list that they could even really turn around to get more players out there. Yes, maybe to Goey or maybe still side bottom for a couple of years. And the really worrying thing for me from the board ruckus, which is absolutely on, is that what Jeff Brown should do right now is come forward and say, I want to be a part of this club and let's work it out. But it's almost more advantageous for Jeff Brown to see them continue to lose games, to see them continue to have instability, continue to have questions from the members, because then it's easier for him to come over and take over as that shining knight, that white shining knight, to say, here I am, Collingwood's at 2-15, and I can save this football club. So I don't know how the club expedites that board situation when he's pretty happy to sit out one wide and one back while Mark Corder continues to make mistakes, and then he just sweeps in.
We're talking about the umpiring situation a little bit over the last couple of weeks, and we don't normally do that on this program, but I just wonder, just with Hayden Kennedy leaving and some of the reasons why he did leave around, you know, the intense speculation on umpiring and all that sort of thing, is that seeing a change potentially from the AFL coming out and saying what they got right and what they got wrong?
Yeah, I think Hayden was always begrudgingly accepting of the fact that he needed to explain decisions. That was something that Wayne Campbell, the former umpire's boss, really pushed hard. You know, I'm not sure whether it's Dan Richardson just, you know, he's more happy to stay in the background there. I'm not really sure why they're so reticent to do that. But what I do know, having spoken to the AFL, is they really feel like it was just a bad weekend of decisions. And the best policy for the AFL is not to talk about it. Now, all that does, according to the AFL, is to, is to shine the light on umpiring. What I would say is that, you know, we got this right, we got this wrong, what's your decision segment, really quickly illustrates again that a lot of things in umpiring are just bad decisions. And so, look, the AFL doesn't have to come out and clarify every decision from that St Kilda Geelong game, but I think if whoever the umpire's boss, and that's probably Dan Richardson, comes out and says, yes, the theme of the weekend was this, we're a bit hot on holding the ball, it was just that some of the mistakes were made. Yes, we'd love to tighten up throws, and we have told the umpires that. Now, I don't think that hangs the umpires out to dry. I don't think that robs the umpires at junior level of any credibility. It just shows that at times, umpiring, when you've got 800 decisions to make a game, you just stuff a couple of them up. That, to me, is much more preferable than the AFL just saying, we don't want to comment about everything. And people from week to week to think, hang on, the AFL has just totally changed the policy, which is not mostly the case.
You just want to change everything you do. You want to change the way the umpires umpire. Now you want to change the rising star and the MVP. What are you doing, Buzz?
Oh, I did look at it because I thought to myself, okay, who wins the MVP? And then I thought, why is it that Josiah Pickett is not eligible for the rising star? Because he played 14 games in his debut season, and the bloke who was picked two positions earlier than him, Tom Green, is now the favourite, having played six games. So is that just an arbitrary figure that someone plucked out in 1993 half? Why are we not saying, you know, the first 2 years of your career is your eligibility? Wouldn't that make more sense than blokes who have been in the system 3 years but are 20 or under, you know, from round one in their eligible year, makes them still able to win the contest? I mean, it's just, I look back at it, you know, there are so many of those major awards. I think, why do the fans have any part in the goal of the year and the mark of the year? And the AFL said, oh, we want to bring the fans in. It's so important to us. Well, you just want clickbait. You just want those fans to register with your website so all of a sudden you can send them out promotional opportunities. I just think if we strip back so many of these awards, why is it the AFL MVP that the players choose, you know, three players from their club, and it means like Patrick Dangerfield, you know, has not been eligible for a couple of years to win the biggest AFLPA award? There's a lot of stupid decisions that get made because they were made at some stage and no one wants to change them up.
Well, my personal view on the Rising Star is it should just be the best first-year player. That's what my view of a rising star is. So yeah, you'd be 20, you could be 24 and come in as a mature age rookie, or 26, come in as a mature age rookie and win it. If you're the first year in a competition, that's just my personal view
I don't mind that. What I'm saying is, let's have a one that's not arbitrary. Let's not say it's 10 games. You're right. First 2 years, first year, first 3 years. Because, you know, that would probably mean that... And I would think that the reason that they have it open is that they want some key position players to win it. You know, I think we saw at one stage Nick Riewoldt missed most of his first year with a knee injury, I think it was. And then he came out having played less than 10 games and won the next year. So if it's the first 2 years, it gives you a little bit more ability for the key position players to win. But I don't mind it. Just make it a fair rule that actually makes a bit of sense.
It's interesting, there's been quite a few double-ups this year because there were fewer games played last year.
4 of 9.
Yeah, well, it was because there was only 17 played last year as opposed to 22. I think you'll find that means that there's going to be more double-ups.
I don't understand why there'd be more double-ups.
Well, because there was only 17 games played last year. A lot of the kids might have played, you know, 5 of 17 rather than 8 of 22 or 9 of 22, like that.
Yeah, and I went through the draft from last year. There's only one of the top 30 has been nominated this year.
That's interesting.
One, and that was to Braden Campbell. And the next one nominated is Errol Goulden, which is 32.
Yeah, and Braden hasn't played for quite a while either.
So where are these kids this year? Where are they?
Well, it might be the first sign of the no football last year factor.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Buzz, we've got to keep rolling. You're a gem, and you won't be delisted around here. Continue using the words and just put the letters in different spots.
Same letters, just differently. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, John. John Ralph, the Buzz with us from the Herald Sun.